Good morning. We want to wish everyone a Gemar Tov, everyone who's listening on the web, as well as those who are here at OU World Headquarters. Our topic this morning is much more of a universal topic. It relates to prayer, tefillah in general. And that is, what is the nature of tefillah? What do we mean by that? We have a term in English. We call it prayer. Prayer is this universal term. Prayer actually is, believe it or not, is a dirty word for Jews. Why? Because prayer comes from the Latin term to beg. And that really has nothing to do with tefillah. You know, we say in Yiddish, davening, or in Hebrew, tefillah. And the question is, especially this time of year that we spend as much time as we do davening, what is the nature of Jewish prayer, of tefillah? What we're going to do this morning is, our agenda is essentially to look at five terms that come from Tanakh. Five terms from Tanakh, how Chazal understood these terms, and it gives us a great insight into that unique methodology of what we call tefillah, that which makes Judaism and our relationship with God so unique. Now, there are a number of questions. First and foremost is, what is tefillah? That's the general question that we're going to try to address. Another question, that's a famous question that's been addressed by the Rishonim for years, and that is, if God is perfect, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is perfection, then what in the world am I trying to manipulate or to change God? How can you change Hashem if He's perfect? So what is the whole enterprise of prayer? That's the second question. A third question is, and that is this, is that Freud was very critical of people of religion. You know, Sigmund Freud was a great, in terms of his analysis of the human condition and the human psyche, he was brilliant. In terms of a philosopher, he was a very poor philosopher. It happens in general. Sometimes you have someone who's very good in one area, intellectual discipline, but it doesn't make them, by definition, experts in other areas. So what did Freud do? He was very critical of people of religion. He says, you know what they are? He says, essentially, you have a child, and the child wants to get on mommy or daddy's good side, right? They want to butter up mommy or daddy. And if they smile a certain way, if they do a certain thing, if they, whether it's shake their head or clean their room, they know they're going to get a prize, they're going to get a treat, they're going to be in the graces of mother and father. What happens? What happens is, when we're adults, Freud was very critical, he says, we have this notion of the projected father figure image. We replace mommy and daddy with God. And what do? In order that we're healthy and God forbid we don't get cancer, in order that we have a good parnasa this year, in order that everything should go well with our families, what do? We try to push the right buttons, you know, so it's not as simple as smiling, you know, or looking a certain way or cleaning our room, but we push other buttons to try to get on God's good side. Very critical of people of religion, and that's how he viewed them. Now, the tragedy of Sigmund Freud, obviously, is what? He didn't understand tefillah. He didn't understand the Midas HaRachamim. And speaking of that, that's our fourth question. What is the Midas HaRachamim? Imagine the following. You're a judge, okay? The person in front of you is absolutely guilty. The person in front of you is a menace to society. But you know what? The person in front of you, the last name is so-and-so, or they come from this family, or you know the person's mother, or you knew the person's grandfather. So because the person comes from this family and they were good people in the generations past, you know what? We're not going to use the Midas Hadin. We're not going to use objective, strict judgment. We're going to give them a pass, or we're going to be a little light on the way we treated this person. You and I, observing that judge, would say, that judge has perverted justice. That judge has corrupted justice. So how can it be that we, obviously the Midas HaRachamim doesn't mean the words attribute of mercy, right? Really, we deserve X, Y, and Z. But because we're the Bnei Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and because we're the Jewish people, you know, God should take a different approach, and He should forgive us and give us a pass. I mean, again, if we have a sense of objective justice, of what's fair, of equity, that's a perversion of equity. That's a perversion of what's fair. So how does the Midas HaRachamim work? Just to review, what is tefillah? That's going to be our primary agenda. Let's define what is tefillah. And by doing that, we're going to answer the other questions. How can you change God if God is perfection? Number one. Number two is, what is our notion of prayer? Is it just a projected father figure image that we're trying to get on Big Daddy in the sky's, you know, good graces? That's the next question. And the final question, of course, is, what is the Midas HaRachamim? How can you say there's such a thing as an attribute of mercy What does that mean? Isn't that a perversion of justice? Isn't that a perversion of all equity and all fairness? So those are our questions. What are we going to do this morning? We're going to define five terms. For those on the web, we apologize that the sources did not come across on the web. Don't worry, because there's not a significant number of sources. And if you email rrs@ou.org, ronronsam, rrs@ou.org, there actually are two sources we're going to look at, a Gemara in Brachos and a Mishnah in Brachos. And it's something you can have for posterity's sake. For the shiur, you won't need it, those who are at home on the web. What are the five terms we're going to analyze? Number one, tefillah. What does tefillah mean? Number two, amida. What does amida mean? Number three, sicha. What does sicha mean? Number four, pigia. What does pigia mean? And number five, techina, from ve'et chanan, right? Pigia is va'yifga b'makom, Yaakov's tefillah. What does that mean? And what is techina, from the word ve'et chanan, Moshe's tefillah? These are five terms in Tanakh, four from the Chumash, one that's used in Sefer Tehillim as well. And what we're going to do is just try to define those five terms. If we can define the five terms that Hashem gave us, they will give us an insight. They will give us the ability to explain the four questions. Okay, number one. The easiest term to define is tefillah. Why is it the easiest term? Because it's famous, because we've all heard this before. First of all, lehit palel is a reflexive. It means I'm doing something to myself. Whenever you have what's called hit pa'el, the reflexive tense in Ivrit, in Hebrew, it means you're doing something back at yourself. So what is pilel? We have the verse in Tehillim about Pinchas. Pilel means to judge or to analyze. What's lehit palel? To judge myself, to analyze myself. Tefillah is not prayer. Prayer from the Latin word to beg. What do we do when we daven? We're not these passive beggars, but what? We're very active. We're very engaged. We're analyzing and judging ourselves. To use an example, I want health. What am I going to do with health? I'm not going to pray for the health of Osama bin Laden, right? There's no value in him being healthy, so he should have many gesunte years of taking innocent lives and wreaking havoc on the world economy and on humanity and decency. So if I'm going to ask, pray for someone that they should be healthy, why? Is health an end in itself? Oh, if you have your health, you have everything, right? How many times have we heard that? What's the purpose of health? So, rifa'enu Hashem v'nei rafei, hoshi'enu v'niva she'a. The purpose of health is what? That ultimately it will lead to our perfection, our spiritual perfection. We don't just ask for refuah. We ask for rifa'enu Hashem v'nei rafei, God heal us, in order that what? Hoshi'enu v'niva she'a. That we can use health, which means a strong, healthy body, which means a strong, healthy mind, which means an energy where we can engage for hours and hours of each and every day doing what? Making our families, our community, the world a better place. So what are we doing? We're judging or analyzing ourselves. What are our needs? Why would we want these needs? What are we going to do with these needs? I'll give you an example. I want $10 million. So I say, you know why, Hashem? Because if I have $10 million, I'm going to help this yeshiva that's doing terribly financially. I'm going to help this institution. I'm going to support NCSY. I'm going to be a supporter of Yachad. Well, you know what? So why do I have to have the $10 million? If that's true, Hashem should facilitate that Yachad gets millions of dollars at NCSY, that this yeshiva, that yeshiva gets the money, right? Why does it have to be me? What is it, something about my ego? Oh, I should get the honor, I should get the glory, everyone should look at me because I'm giving the money? So it's not really that I need $10 million. What is it that I really want? You know, again, it's an analysis. What are my priorities in life? If Hashem gives me the wealth that I can pay my bills and that I can breathe at the end of the day, if Hashem gives me the health, what am I going to do with that health? What am I going to do with that wealth? These are the kind of things that's tefillah. We're standing before God. It's always lifnei Hashem. It's before God. And we're looking very seriously about who we are, what are our needs as opposed to our wants, what are our values. Why do we want them? Why do we need them? What are we going to do with them? And it's not a very simple thing. Okay, Hashem's going to give me relationships. What am I going to do with these relationships? Am I going to manipulate and play these people and get them, you know, ingratiate myself with them? What am I going to do for them? If I have a relationship, I can tell the world that so-and-so is my friend and that I hobnob with this one and that one. What am I going to do with that relationship? What can I do for them? Why do I want that relationship? Etc., etc. That's tefillah. What's Amidah? It describes Abraham's prayer. Is he stood. So before we answer Amidah, which means standing, we also need the term of Yitzchak's prayer. Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basadeh. What in modern Hebrew is the translation of sicha? Isaac goes out lasuach to what? To dialogue, to have a communication, an intimate one-on-one relationship. So we have two terms that are used here describing tefillah that are almost what we're going to use. We're going to call this a dialectic. What's a dialectic? There are two poles, and we oscillate between the two poles. On the one hand, Amida. So I apologize to those who are watching on the at home. Amida is like this, standing at attention, right? Ke'eved lifnei harav. Like almost, imagine a soldier standing before the commander, the captain. Imagine, you know, someone who's there with attention. There's a sense of awe. There's a sense of reverence that's conveyed by that body language. The body, the communication of Amida is awe and reverence. What's conveyed by Sicha? Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basada? Just the opposite. Intimacy. Warmth. A relationship. What's the dialectic between, on one hand, awe and reverence and intimacy? And I want to develop this idea of intimacy for a second. If you and I were going to be meeting the president or the governor, we would never speak Balashon Nochach, in English, second person. We would never speak that way. How would we speak? Third person. The president. The governor. Mr. President. I would never say you. You. You is what? It's like we're almost that we're equals. We're on the same footing. There's no sense of awe, of reverence there. There's intimacy, there's warmth, there's collegiality. So what happens when we dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Baruch Atah Hashem. You, Hashem, are the source of all blessing. You. There's an intimacy. Now, right away, what do we do afterwards? We say Melech HaOlam, the master of the universe. So there's this dialectic between a warmth, a second person relationship, and a sense of awe, reverence, a sense of respect, a third person relationship. What's the idea there? Because what is prayer? What is tefillah? On the one hand, we are analyzing and judging ourselves in a context of what? Not with our feet up on the table, cigar in my mouth, you know, with a bowl of pretzels. No. We're doing it in a position of awe and reverence, that we're before the infinite, before the Almighty. But at the same time, if all there is awe and reverence, it's not a relationship of warmth, of closeness, of parent-child. What is, I give an example. We are saying this time of year, Avinu Malkeinu, Rabbi Akiva's famous tefillah, the 24 Avinu Malkeinus. What's the dialectic between Avinu Malkeinu? It's the same idea. On the one hand, he's our father. There's a warmth, there's a closeness, but that's not Hashem. If all Hashem is your parent, you know, that you can, you know, get away with this and get away with that and wiggle this, etc., that's not a relationship. At the same time, it's Malkeinu. There has to be a sense of God is the infinite. God is the master and I'm the servant. But at the same time, if all there is God is the master and I'm the servant, there's no warmth to that relationship. So the dialectic that Rabbi Akiva is conveying with Avinu Malkeinu, we do that every day, every time we daven. Every time that there's a tefillah, we have that. That's Avraham's notion of Amida, describing Avraham's prayer as Amida, and at the same time, Yitzchak's prayer of Sicha. Respect, a sense that I'm not the center of the universe. The axis of the universe does not rotate and revolve around me and my needs and my wishes. Hashem is a melech. It's Amida. I am there to serve, but at the same time, that it's a one-on-one relationship. It's a personal relationship, intimacy, a rendezvous, a dialogue. That's Sicha. The fourth term, the term that Yaakov uses, vayifga b'makom. This is the most difficult term. This is the most difficult term to define. We're going to translate pigia or vayifga b'makom, pei gimel ayin, as confrontation. That Yaakov confronted the Omniscient One. There was a confrontation. What does that mean? So this term pigia is much closer to the term tefillah. It's a much more acute, a stronger term, vayifga b'makom. What is that? The best example that I'd like to give is Chana. Chana, as you know, she's the poster child. She's the role model. She is the one that we look to when it comes to how a Jew should communicate with the Ribbono Shalom. What does prayer mean? Well, Chana was barren. She was not going to have a child. She had a natural maternal instinct to have a child of her own. It's her child. The child would be dependent upon her. You know, to coddle, to love, to hold. That natural instinct that exists in every human being. She had that. She says, Hashem, if it's not going to work, then let me come up with an alternative system. Let me come up with a system where at least I can fulfill some of those needs. But instead of it being my selfish needs, you know, it's my child, it's my baby. He calls, when I call, he comes to me. He's attached to me. What I'll do is I'm going to take this child and dedicate this child as a servant to the Jewish people, as a servant to God. This child, as we know, became Shmuel HaNavi. What did she do? She was able, on the one hand, to have these certain natural maternal instincts that she had fulfilled, but at the same time, to take it and to give it, use this child, not for self-centered or selfish needs, but for a greater need, and that is the needs of the people, where he became a public servant. We know what happened with Shmuel HaNavi. He became the great educational reformer. He, unlike any leader before him, and unlike most leaders after him, he didn't stay in, so to speak, his capital. He went from community to community. All year long, he went into the Jewish towns, villages, and cities, and he set up an educational establishment so that every Jewish boy and every Jewish girl would have a meaningful, serious Jewish education, so that there would be a transformation of the Jewish people. They wouldn't just go through, in a rote fashion, robotic fashion, the mitzvot, but they would understand them, that there would be a whole dialogue, there would be an engagement, la'asok b'divrei Torah. He created a Jewish world that was engaged, that was seriously engaged, what? In meaningful Jewish experiences. How did he do that? By going from town to town, community to community, setting them up, establishing them, working with the communities. Where did this come from? Because he had a mother who raised him from the start to be a servant to the Jewish people, to give of his life to the Jewish people. This is Chana. This is her prayer. If I can't have a child like every other woman who has a child, then at least let me have the child to fulfill certain needs that I have, but I will take this child and consecrate him, and be makdish, to dedicate him as a servant to his people and a servant to God. I want to use her tefillah, which is a model, as an analogy. Hashem, and before we come back to Pegiah, because it's a difficult term in terms of explaining what is the confrontation that we have when we confront Hashem, what does that mean? I want at this time, let's answer the question of how the Midas HaRachamim works. The Midas HaRachamim is the following. It doesn't mean literally the attribute of mercy. What does it mean? If we'll use the analogy of a stereo system, I have a stereo system. It doesn't work. It's broken. There are two things I can do with it, two logical things I can do with the stereo system. I can trash it, throw it out, because it's failed to fulfill its purpose. It's dysfunctional. It doesn't produce what it was supposed to produce. So the Midas HaDin would say, throw it out. There's no reason to keep it around. It's not an antique. It has no value if it doesn't function as a stereo system. That's Midas HaDin. What's Midas HaRachamim? Let's repair it. Let's redo the wiring. Let's fix this part. And then it will function as a stereo system. It will now be a working, operative, functional stereo system. That's the Midas HaRachamim. It's coming up with a system of perfecting something which is broken, perfecting something which has failed, perfecting something which is dysfunctional so that it becomes functional. That's the Midas HaRachamim. So if we can leave the stereo system, let's talk about ourselves. Midas Hadin would mean the following. I've used every second that God gave me the past year. I've used all the wealth that he gave me. I've used my talents. After all, I'm unique. I have a certain mother and father. I have certain life experiences. I have certain teachers. I have certain friends in a community. And they've made me into who I am. And my personality is different than any other human being, right? Kishem shepartzufeim shonos. Just like we look different one from the other, kach deoseim shonos. So to personality-wise, psychologically, in terms of what we have to contribute, we're different one from the other. That's the meaning of chazal bishvili nivra olam. Doesn't mean the world rotates around me or revolves around me. That's not bishvili nivra ha'olam. What's bishvili nivra ha'olam? What does that mean, that term? That term means that I have something to contribute to the Jewish people. I have something to contribute to the world that is unique and distinct as a function of the fact that I'm unique and distinct, as a function of the fact that I have a different personality, a different background, something to contribute that no one else can. So what happens? No one can stand before Hashem. We say on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Mi Yitzdak Lefanecha. Who could ever be acquitted? Who could ever come out with the Midas Hadin and saying, you know what? I deserve to continue because I used all of my talents, all of my time, all of my abilities, what is unique and special to me, I've used it all and I've been perfect this past year. No one could claim that. So what do we do? What do we do when we daven? We employ the Midas HaRachamim. I know that I've wasted a lot of time. And I know that I have a problem with anger management. And I know that I'm cheap and stingy. And I know, you know what, that I'm not very grateful and I don't express gratitude very well. Hashem, I'm asking you for the following gifts. And we'll see why I'm using the term gift. I don't deserve it. It's not something I deserve. But I'm asking you for the following help. Because if I get X, Y, and Z, it will help me with my stingy problem. It will help me with anger management. I'm going to go to anger management classes. I'm going to learn by this Rebbe. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to, following that, when I get into the situation with my wife or my parents or my co-workers, etc., I'm going to employ the following methods. Let's take the person, okay, who's got an ego issue, right? It's very, you know, unfortunately, is, you know, has a warped sense of himself. Hashem, if you give me the opportunity and I think I need X and I'm going to need Y and I'm going to need Z and I'm going to need the following patience from these people, I'm going to work on my ego and I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. Hashem, I know one thing. I'm an Am Haaretz D'Oraisa. I've had so much time in my life that you've given me of health and time and I'm an ignoramus. I can't even read a Tosfos. And it's a shame because I've wasted the opportunities you've given me. But Hashem, I'm asking you to give me time. I'm going to use it to do this, and I'm going to attend this year, and I'm going to set up this chavrusa, and I'm going to work on the following project this year so I have a better understanding of this component of Judaism. What is the Midas HaRachamim? It's coming up with an alternative plan. It's coming up with a system, a methodology of us perfecting ourselves. Instead of throwing out the stereo system in the case of us losing our lives, what are we asking for? X, Y, and Z, in order that we can use X, Y, and Z, whether it's a gift of time, of wealth, of relationships, a gift of whatever it may be, a job, and we're going to take X, Y, and Z, and we're going to do the following with it so that we become something different. That employment, that understanding of what the Midas HaRachamim is, that's Pigia. What did Yaakov do, Vayifka B'makom, in that prayer? It wasn't that different than Chana's prayer. He knew he was going into very, very challenging a world. A world where he was a refugee who was being hunted down by his own flesh and blood, by Esav and his children. He knew that he was going to Lavan, and he knew full well who and what Lavan was. And even if Yaakov doesn't become, I apologize to anyone out there who's a used car salesman, etc. I don't mean this personally, but yet Lavan was the poster child for used car salesman. That's the best thing you could say about him. You could say a lot worse. So even if Yaakov doesn't become Lavan, but via osmosis, living with this person, living in this environment, it rubs off on you. When we're in an environment where people speak and use a certain type of language, it rubs off on us. When we're in an environment where people are not glat yosher, where there's not a clear defined demarcation between what? Between truth and falsehood, between emes and sheker, so we become drayers. We're not explicit liars. But we fudge the truth. We dray. We leave out facts. Because why? The whole boundary between truth and falsehood. Via osmosis. He knew the world he was going into. And he asked Hashem for certain, what he felt were needs. to enable him to get through and to survive that experience. That's a confrontation by Yifgah B'Makom, because you're coming to Hashem saying, look, I have the following needs, I have the following challenges, and I'm going to take these needs if you give them to me, and this is what I'm going to do with them. Yaakov asked for very minimal needs. He really weighed what he was looking for. But what's the point? We need to be doing that in each and every prayer. That is the confrontation, Vayifgah B'Makom. That is employing the Midas HaRachamim. Now, I want to answer a couple of the questions we asked at the beginning. We see one thing. Tefillah is not about begging. Tefillah is a very engaged, very serious, very acute activity. Okay? What does it mean, how can you change God? We ask the question, how do you change God? We're not changing God. Why is it that we're entitled to, so to speak, that's a wrong term, I don't mean entitled. Why is it that we can approach Hashem in tefillah? And that are we not trying to change or manipulate God? The answer is what? We're not changing God. Chas v'shalom. The change is taking place in us. The transformation through the experience of prayer is taking place in us. We're the ones who are changing. If I'm no longer the same person I was last week, I'm a different person, well, Hashem's system of Hashgacha, I'm entitled to a different response, a different relationship, because I'm not the same person. I've changed. I'm not Mr. A, I'm Mr. B. The change is in us. And just to develop this theme, the Mishnah in Brachos in the fifth parak says the following: Chasidim harishonin hayushohin shoachas kodem tefilosan. The pious ones of antiquity, the Chasidim harishonim. Chasid means in halacha Chasid. I'm not talking about the sociological group that started in the 18th century in Galicia and in the Ukraine. I'm talking about the Mishnaic term Chasid is someone who goes above and beyond the letter of the law. A tzaddik is someone who does everything correct and everything proper. A Chasid is someone who goes above and beyond. Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. The Chasidim HaRishonim didn't just daven three times a day. What did they do? They sat for an hour and they prepared and they worked out what is it that is flawed with us. What is it that we need to do to improve, to perfect ourselves, to be better Jews, to be better human beings, to be better parents, to be better siblings, to be better co-workers, to be better employers? And they would work out a system. I'll give you an analogy. I did this once. Halavai should do this when I daven. One of the times that I gave the invocation for President Bush, I had an opportunity. I was going to have the President of the United States, remember, this is going into 2004, into the election. At this point, President Bush was extremely popular. You know, the war in Iraq had not turned the other way. And what happened was, I was going to have the most powerful man on the face of the earth was going to be listening to me. They gave me 3 to 5 minutes. I figured out 3 to 5 minutes. I translated, pulpit rabbi, translated that into 5 to 7 minutes, right? So, Machmir took 7, you know. But I was going to have his ear for 7 minutes. I worked out that invocation. I worked on it, and I worked on it. I talked to some of the heads of AIPAC. I talked to certain governmental officials. I talked to leaders of the Jewish community, Malcolm Holmline, others. And I worked on what I should say and how I could say it in a meaningful way that he wouldn't just turn me off. I had to be in a way that he was open to hear it. I worked on that 7-minute presentation for hours and hours. Every word was a piece of a symphony. Okay? Do we ever do that when we talk to the real boss? Not the perceived leader of the world, but the real, the Melech Malchei Hamlachim? That's what the Chasidim HaRishonim would do before they davened. They would employ the Midas HaRachamim to come up with a system, and they would analyze themselves, again, from the word Lehitz Palel. They would analyze and judge themselves and their community and the needs of their community and the needs of their family and the needs of Klal Yisrael and the needs of humanity. And they would ask for certain things. And for what purpose? Not for the sake of having them. Not for the sake of, you know, I'm king of the hill, I've got all this money, or I've got all this health and all this knowledge, but for using it, employing it, etc., to make the world a better place. To make the Jewish people a better people, to make ourselves better human beings and better Jews, and to make our families better families. That's the idea of tefillah. That's the pikiya. That's the confrontation. These Chasidim HaRishonim, they would sit and they would analyze and they would work it out before they encountered Hashem. And yes, Their prayer was a sicha. It was intimate. It was warm. It was a one-on-one, a rendezvous, a dialogue. And at the same time, it was an amida. It was from a perspective of reverence and awe. So we have one last term. We've explained amida, we've explained sicha, we've explained pigia, we've explained tefillah. The last term is from the beginning of Parshas Veschanan, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Chav Gimel, and Sefer Devarim, Veschanan, Moshe's prayer. So Rashi there on Veschanan says what? Quoting Chazal, Etchanan, you could have explained it differently from the word chanun, empathy. But he says, Matnas Chinam. Moshe, the most perfected human being on the face of the earth, not just at that time, but we're talking about the most perfected human being from the inception of the beginning of humanity. No one before, no one after, will ever attain that level of intellectual perfection. Moshe Rabbeinu, that same Moshe, what does he do? What does Moshe do? He doesn't say, listen, Hashem, no one's done for you what I've done. No one's changed the destiny of humanity. No one before, no one after will ever do it. No one's given every day of their life for your people to take a bunch of former illiterate pagan slaves and transform them into the Dordea, the people of wisdom, of knowledge, of understanding. I lived most of my adult life as a refugee for your people. No, he doesn't come to Hashem like that. His whole attitude, and that's why the verb, ve'eschanan, matnas chinam, he sincerely believes Hashem owes him nothing. He is entitled to nothing. He has nothing. He deserves nothing. If it's given to him, in this case he's asking for the ability to live as a Jew in the land of Israel, to cross the Yarden and to be able to worship and to relate to Hashem from the context of the total system of perfected monotheism, from the ability to observe all of the Taryag mitzvos, which you can't do outside of Israel, he views it as a freebie, not because he deserves it. So as engaged, as hard as we work, and as with good a plan as we come up with, our attitude is always, God owes me nothing. It is by the largesse, the grace of the Almighty. It is only because of Chesed Elyon that I have what I have, and anything that I ask for, and anything that I claim that I need, and anything that's a necessity for me to be able to do whatever it is that I want to do, help this one, improve myself, all of that is strictly matnas chinam, va'eschanan. And by the way, we borrow that term, va'eschanan. We have something called tachanun. Tachanun, this is not integral to the shiur, but I want to go for a 1.5 minute digression because it's important once we bring up this term tachanun. It's very interesting. If you look in the Rambam or if you look in the Gemara and the Mishnaic sources before that, you don't have that term tachanun. The term they use is nefilas apayim, falling on your face. We call it tachanun. And it's interesting about nefilas apayim. Whether it's the Nusach Ashkenaz, whether it's Nusach Svard, whether it's the Svardi Tahori, you know, whatever the Minhagim are, they have different texts as to what they say, what they do. Depends on which minyan you go to, depends which siddur, which community you're from. There's no objective text to Nefilas Apayim. But there's one crucial thing, falling on your face. And the tour would not take this approach, but we're taking the approach of the Rambam, and this is the approach that the halachic community follows. Both Ashkenaz and the Svardi Tahorim follow. That Tachanun, what we call Tachanun, or what they refer to as falling on our face, Nefilas Apayim, it's an integral component of the prayer service. That's a dirty word, prayer. We don't use it anymore. The tefillah service of davening. Why? You know why? Because in our relationship with God, as warm and as close as intimate we are, that's that face-to-face rendezvous. We just went face-to-face with Melech Malchei Melachim. You can't get a face-to-face with the president or the governor or even the mayor in some cities. And whenever you want, you're entitled to have a face-to-face with the Ribbono Shel Olam, a meaningful dialogue. But sometimes when you're that close, you lose perspective. So what do? We retract, we recoil, we step back, and we fall on our faces. That's why you're not allowed to have a hefsek. You're not allowed to talk in between the Amida and Tachanun and Nefilas Apayim. Why? Because we realize, who have I been confronting? Who have I been standing in front of? You get perspective. My goodness, there's a sense of awe, a sense of reverence you have to have for the omniscient one. So immediately after that face-to-face where you use the word atah, you, right? It's a personal relationship. Immediately we recoil. I'm using the Rambam's terminology from Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah. Miyad hu nirta l'achorav. Immediately you recoil, you retract backwards and fall on your face. Because there was the ahava, now there's a sense of yira. That's from Veschanan. Hashem owes me nothing. Whatever he gives is only a matnas chinam. It's only an expression of largesse and of giving, not because I am entitled or I have it coming. That's the fifth term. I just want to review for a minute or two. We're going to wrap this up. What did we say? We were bothered by a number of questions. Number one is, what is tefillah? So we said tefillah, because of the five terms that Hashem has explained and developed tefillah, the term Amida from a perspective of awe and reverence by Avraham, Sicha, the intimacy, it's a one-on-one, a dialogue, Ata, there's a warmth, there's a relationship. Pegiah, the confrontation, where we come up with a system like Chana did, like Yaakov did before he left Israel to go to Lavan, to go into the exile. We come up with a system of what we believe are our sincere needs and what we're going to do with those needs if we're given them by Hashem, how we will use them to transform and perfect ourselves, employing the Midas HaRachamim. That's Pegiah, that's confrontation. Tefillah, as we said, the experience of tefillah is what? Of one where we analyze ourselves, we judge ourselves. Not in a vacuum, but standing before Hashem from a perspective of humility, which is conveyed by Amida. That self-analysis, self-judgment, which is again employing the Midas HaRachamim, which is part of the system of the Pekiah, the confrontation, of coming up with a system of how to improve our communities, our families, ourselves. And there's also Chanina, the phrase that's used in Tachanun that comes from the Eschanan. As Rashi said, Amat Naschinam. We don't demand it of Hashem. We don't believe for a second that we have it coming or that we're entitled to it. It's a matnas chinam. It's a gift. It's a gift of largesse and free will from Hashem. How does this answer our questions? That describes to us a system, number one, of tefillah. Number two is, it answers Freud's question. We do not act like grown-up children, the projected father figure image. Not at all. We have a proper perspective of Hashem as one of awe and reverence of the master of the universe. But Hashem that through his system of how he created the universe with the Midas HaRachamim, reflected by the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, the four-letter ineffable name, is what? That Hashem gives a human being through struggle, not through manipulation, God forbid, not through any manipulation whatsoever, but through honest, sincere struggle of coming up with an alternative plan, employing the Midas HaRachamim, of perfecting and repairing ourselves and our families and our communities. That's what tefillah is. If Freud only understood and knew what tefillah was. And the other thing is, God forbid, if Hashem is perfect, we ask, well, how can you change? What are you doing? Trying to change Hashem? We're not changing Hashem at all. The change is taking place within us internally. The change is internal. That's where the transformation takes place. That's what tefillah is. And that's the system of the Midas HaRachamim that tefillah uses, that tefillah employs. That's the idea of tefillah, of Amida, of Sicha, of Pegiah, of Chanina, of Eschanan. Those are the terms that first the Tanakh, and then Chazal and Masechta Brachos and Daf Chav Vav Amud Beis, and those terms you'll see as they're associated. We've talked about them outside, but those terms are actually written inside in the Gemara and Chav Vav Amud Beis and Masechta Brachos. And we use the example from the Mishnah in Brachos, which can be found in Daf Lamed Amud Beis, of the Chasidim HaRishonim. They on one hand, Yaakov on the other, Chana is another example of great Jews who employed this system, who knew the methodology of tefillah, of prayer, and employed the system of the Midas HaRachamim to ultimately transform and perfect themselves, their families, their communities, Klal Yisrael, and the destiny of humanity. What we want to do is to wish those who are here at OU World Headquarters at 11 Broadway, those who are listening on the web or who will be watching the video over the course of the year, we want to wish not only that it should be a very, very meaningful year, and that we should have a sincere, real relationship with Hashem, but that ultimately the gift of tefillah that Hashem gave us, we could utilize and employ that great, great gift, employ it and utilize it properly, understand it, to ultimately transform ourselves, our greater community, and the destiny of humanity for a better tomorrow. Thank you.